Okay, good evening. Happy Hanukkah to everyone. Nice to be able to learn together, learn some Torah to commemorate Hanukkah. As you might be able to see, so I'm actually live from the base of Medrash. So I'm going to start hopefully doing many of my shiurim from here, just to give us a sense of being in shul, for those able to see. The topic I want to address tonight is sort of a basic theme of Hanukkah, not necessarily anything where I have particularly new chidushim, but something that warrants exploration, and want to, I guess, provide a particular avenue that might be relevant for this year. I guess growing up, I always was told that Hanukkah was the story of the war between the Jews and the Greeks, and how we, you know, the small army of the Jews overcame the Syrian Greeks, or they're probably just called the Greeks. You know, it was an us versus them kind of an issue. When we look more carefully at the story, you see this at the beginning of Maccabees. So this wasn't just a story about Jews versus Greeks, but there's also a sort of internal battle going on. We weren't just fighting the Yevanim, but also the Mityavnim, those who were becoming Greek, those who were Hellenizing. And what I think is interesting about the complexity of this topic is that I don't think we can look at Hellenization as being all good or all bad. So it's something that needs to be examined carefully. And I think where the error was when it came to the Mityavnim was that they particularly went just a little bit too far, or a way bit too far, in assimilating or even acculturating to Greek culture. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all Greek culture is bad. And it's, of course, it's important to note that Greek names finds there are rabbis in the Gemara that have, in the Mishnah and the Gemara that have Greek names. The Seder, as we know it, is very much modeled off the Greek Symposium. Seems to be sort of a basic understanding, especially if you sort of understand the historical context. That definitely seems to be the case. So obviously some of the mitzvahs that we do are originally from the Torah, but the whole idea of having a Seder, and even the institution of Arba Kosos, can have some correlation. So Judaism has not necessarily been one to entirely shun a particular culture. But there's what to understand about what are the limits and the opportunities, how does that impact us? And you know, we could look at Hanukkah as a historical event, but we can also ask, you know, to what extent are we Hellenists today? To whatever extent that we embrace American culture, that we see ourselves as part of American society, which I think most people who are part of Queens Jewish Center in some way or another are part of Jewish society, and even some more even more right-wing parts of the Orthodox community, not necessarily that much more right-wing than this, but just, you know, those that are conservative in some ways, might oppose a certain part of American culture, but embrace of, you know, another part of American culture. Those on the right are sort of, you know, there's certain parts of the religious right, they're uniting Jews, Christians, and the like. So the notion that we're entirely separatists obviously doesn't seem to be valid, but I think it's worth looking at. There is a category called Greek wisdom, Chachma Yevanis, that is worth understanding and seeing how that impacts where we are today. So one particular place perhaps to start with all of this, let's see if I can make this a little bigger. So already back in Bereshis, there's a pasuk that says Yaftel Kim LeYafes. So after Cham, Shem Cham and Yafes. So after Cham, the son of Noah, embarrasses, humiliates his father while he's drunk, or perhaps even worse. So bracha is given to his son Yafes. Yaftel Kim LeYafes. Yishkon Bo LeShem. May God enlarge Yafes and let him dwell in tents of shame. Knan, who's the son of Cham, should be a slave to them. And then later on, it tells us the lineage of Yefes. So Yavan, which is presumably the father of Greece and Greek culture, is the son of Yefes, who is blessed by Noah. And there's a Gemara Megillah that tells us, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Torah scrolls, they're going to be written in another language, could only be written in Greek. And the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So we don't translate the Torah, you know, in the Torah scroll in another language, but if you're going to do it, it would have to be in Greek. And the Septuagint is Greek, and I guess that's a separate parsha coming up in a week on the Sabra Tevis and the translation of the Torah into Greek. But here the Gemara seems to have a positive view of the Greek language to the point where it is a fitting language in which to translate the Torah. And this is and what's the basis of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel? The Torah says, Yavta Elokim LeYefes, Yishkon Be'ol Hashem. Rav Shal Yefes Yiyu Be'ol Hashem. The words of Yefes should be in the tense of Shem. Shem, you know, we talk about the yeshiva of Shem and Aver, that Shem is the ancestor of Abraham. So there can't be some sort of meaning of the language of Yefes in the yeshivas of Shem. So the Torah says, Ema Gog Magog. So shouldn't that be true of Gog and Magog, who were descendants of Yefes as well? So the idea of Yefes, Yavta Elokim LeYefes, if you so shall Yefes Yehei Be'ol Hashem. The beauty of Yefes should be in the tent of shame. So that demonstrates that so the understanding, as Rashi explains, that Yavta Elokim LeYefes, the Greek language is the most beautiful language, and there is something particularly worthy of Greek language in itself. But that said, there's a Mishnah in Masechet Sota. It says the following: the Pumos, in the word war with Vespasian, the Pumos shall Aspanius during the war with Vespasian, Gazru alataros Kasanim. Grooms are not allowed to wear crowns. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, Adam Espino Yavanis. In the day, and the Puma shall Titus, during the war with Titus, there was a decree against brides wearing crowns, and nobody should teach their child Greek. Nobody should teach a child Greek. So I have to understand a little bit what that means, but that's what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara goes on to explain this a little bit. I'll read this in English. It's a long Gemara, but it's worth. There's a story here, so it's worth reading. So why did Chazal decree against Greek? So when the king of the Hasmonean dynasty, at a later point after the Maccabees, when the kings of the Hasmonean monarchy besiege each other in the civil war, so there's a war that breaks out between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. So this is as great as the Hashmonaim war for what they did for Hanukkah. There's a little bit of a downfall. There's a civil war. So Hyrcanus is outside, Aristobulus is inside. And each day they would lower dinars in the box from inside the city, and those on the outside would set up animals for them to bring the daily offering. So there's still an effort to bring korbanos. Both sides, agree that it's important to continue korbanos. So that's the cooperation that they have. Okay. So a certain elder was there in Yerushalayim who was familiar with Greek wisdom. He communicated to those on the outside by means of Greek wisdom, what we call Chachma Yevanis, using words understood only by those proficient in Greek wisdom. So he said to them, as long as they engage in the temple service, they will not be delivered into your hands. So you have no chance of winning. You have no chance of winning, they say to Hyrcanus, as long as there's a vote of space on my judge. So upon hearing this, on the following day, when they lowered dinar into the box, they said a pig instead. And once a pig reached halfway up the wall, it inserted its hooves into the wall, and Eretz Yisrael shouted 4,000 parsings. Parsings are parsing in here, right? 400 parsings. Okay. So when sages saw this, they said, at the time, cursed somebody who raises pigs. Okay, so it's not just a kosher thing, but there's a negative attitude towards pigs for this reason. And they say, Aror Adam Shilamet Libnochakwa Yabanis. Curse if somebody teaches their child, their son, Greek wisdom. So first we saw that there's something about teaching Greek in general, and now we're against teaching Greek wisdom. Rimar says, Ini, is that so? But didn't Rabbi Huda and Asi say, in Eretz Yisrael, why should people speak the tongue of Syriac? They should speak either Lashon HaKodesh or the beautiful tongue of Greek. Speak the beautiful tongue of Greek. So is it true that that Greek wisdom the Greek language is bad? So perhaps there's a difference between the language of Greek and Greek wisdom. So it sounds like the curse is against those who learn Greek wisdom. But the Greek language itself isn't so bad. And is Greek wisdom prohibited? But didn't Rabbi Yehuda say that Shmuel said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? What's the meaning of the verse? My eye affected my soul due to all the daughters of my city. Right? So it says, the answer is, there were 1,000 children in my father's house. 500 of them learned Torah, and the other 500 learned Greek wisdom. And there only remained of them after the Bar Kokhba revolt, me here in Eretz Yisrael, and the son of my father's brother who lives in Asia, in Asia. So perhaps, the Gemara answers, members of the house of Rabban Gamliel are different because they were close to the monarchy, so they had to learn Greek wisdom in order to converse with people of authority. So it sounds like Greek wisdom is bad, but there seems to be a particular heter here. So let's hold that thought for a second. There's another Gemara in Menachos that says that that a person fulfills the mitzvah to learn Torah if they said one chapter of Mishnah in the morning and one chapter in the afternoon. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Rabbi Yochanan says the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, even a person always said Kriya Shema in the morning and evening, they fulfilled the pasuk Lo Yamush Sefer Torah Zem Picha V'Kitza Bo Yom HaLaila, that this Torah scroll should not leave depart your mouth, and you should discuss it. You should converse in it day and night. But it sounds like that you fulfilled the mitzvah of learning Torah every day just by saying Shema, which is part of our daily routine of tefillah. So it's not particularly a high bar. Okay, and Rava says, but Rabbi Shimon Yochai goes on to say that you're not allowed to say this in front of Amei Haaretz. You're not allowed to say this in front of average people, because then they'll say, oh, I've studied enough Torah, I don't need to study Torah otherwise. And Rava says you should say it to Amei Haaretz, so that way, you know, they'll realize that, you know, if you even fulfill the mitzvah just for saying Shema, so, you know, if you learn more Torah, you have more to aspire to, and maybe you'll get more reward. Okay, so now comes the part that's relevant for us. Shal ben Damu ben Achoso Shrabi Shmuel is Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel's nephew asks him, I've learned the entire Torah. Okay, I've learned all of Chumash and I've learned all the Mishnayos. And it's not like there were, you know, Sfarim, Fransfarim, Fransfarim. And they didn't have anything written to work off, but you learned Tanakh, you learned Mishnayos, you learned whatever Midrash is more relevant at that time. So I've learned all the Torah. May I learn Greek wisdom? So Rabbi Shmuel responds, you're not allowed to let Torah leave your mouth, and you're supposed to speak of it day and night. Say ubdok shah she'ina lo min hayom v'lo min halayla. Find a time that is not day and not night, and then you can learn Chokhmah Yevanis. So the point obviously being that it's either going to be day or it's going to be night. If you want to be clever, you can say Bein HaShemashos is neither day or night, so maybe you have a half hour, 40 minutes to learn Torah the whole day. But that doesn't leave very much time for learning Chokhmah Yevanis, so it sounds like a no. But then says Ufuga de Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Yonasan, Pasuk ze eno lo chova velo mitzvah ela bracha. There's a blessing here that that learning Torah is a wonderful thing. It brings us closer to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, something we can appreciate. So perhaps this pasuk is just, you know, blessing us that, you know, that if you're lucky, you'll be able to learn Torah day and night. That doesn't mean that you're obligated to. And it would seem that the implication then is that you are allowed to learn Chochmah Yevamos. So there are a few problems with these two Gemaras on the whole. Number one, the timing doesn't make sense, because the first Mishnah we saw in Sota, which says that there was a Zera not to teach one's child Greek, comes at a different time than this Gemara that has this whole story. So if the whole story of the pig that was offered, that was sent over the wall to be offered as a korban, and then all of that had to do with the fact that somebody was able to speak Greek and communicate in Greek. So if that was the whole problem, so it seems like the Gemara is not fitting the Mishnah. So that's one particular problem. So the Rash Mishans Reb Shimshon of Sens, and he says it's also there's also a contradiction with this Gemara that you know when you ask. When Ben Dama asks if he can learn Chochmah Yevanos, because if you can even ask that question, that sort of assumes that this whole Gzeira doesn't apply. So it's possible, the Rash says, that perhaps at the time of Vespasian in Greek times, so maybe It could be that the time of Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, this story that takes place in the Gemara, which takes place during the period of the Asmoneans, 150 years before Titus. So maybe that originally that decree wasn't accepted, but after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, then it became later accepted. As he says, they made the decree, but it wasn't widely accepted. But then the decree was reinforced, and then it was accepted. Or it's possible that it was a momentary decree, and then becomes a decree that lasts forever at a later point. So that's a possibility. One could ask. Also, you know, what is, you know, what's Yevanos, what's Chochmah Yevanos? So it seems like there's a distinction Gemara makes between the language of Yevanos and the wisdom of Greece, Greek wisdom. So the Rambam in the Parish of Mishnayos says that when it's talking about Greek, so it's not even talking about Greek language, because you have a problem if you say Greek is banned, because it seems like the rabbis of the Mishnah Gemara like Greek language. The Rambam says that your secrets and hints and riddles and some of those hidden things. So that's what Yevani says. That's what one should not teach their child. But maybe that's not all expansive. The Rivash writes in a tshuva. So what's Chochmah Yevanos? What's Yevanos? So he agrees with the Rambam's interpretation, but he says that physics, for example, or metaphysics, is not part of this decree. However, if anything were to contradict or were to be used to uproot Torah, so maybe that would be a problem. The Ramah, Rabbi Meir of Abulafia, a Spanish rishon, writes that Chochmah Yevanos is kagon ela chozim bekochavim amodim lechadashim. Those who engage in astrology. So that's the Greek wisdom that's problematic. And the Meiri writes that it's particularly a philosophy that's problematic. But he sort of embraces a particular distinction that perhaps if one's learned a lot of Torah. And they're well grounded in Torah and its values, and if they're krogim lamalchus, meaning that, like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that they are, that they're involved in public affairs and governmental affairs, they need to be able to communicate with the outside, which is beneficial to the Jewish people. Then maybe that's when they can learn Chochmah Yavanis. So that sort of answers what's Yavanis and Chochma Yavanis. And that perhaps you know, helps us understand a little bit what's going on here. But another issue with all this then is that is the problem really with the, you know, with the actual Chochma Yavanis itself? So it seems like, you know, the story in Sota, that, you know, there's one episode, you know, where things went amok, that there's a particular battle going on. That doesn't mean that, that Greek wisdom is particularly horrible. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says about this that, you know, if it would be one thing obviously they wouldn't make a decree if there was one episode that was particularly problematic. So, you know, things happen sometimes. Doesn't mean that, you know, that the whole, that you have to throw everything down. You have to destroy, you know, every foundation just because somebody uses one thing, you know, for bad. Right? There's so many situations in life where you have things that are generally good and people can use them for the worst. But obviously, Chochma Yavanis must not be entirely neutral. Otherwise, it wouldn't be decreed against. So it could be that the fruits of it are a little bit harmful. But that doesn't necessarily make all Chochma Yavanis harmful, because again, it seems like there's a possibility that, you know, one could learn Chochma Yavanis and that you know, the decrees weren't even accepted. So it doesn't sound like that, you know, that, you know, if you look at you know, the Torah itself, the whole thing is entirely bad from, you know, from beginning to end. But it could be that the result of it, you know, one has to be careful of. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein also suggests that when you look at this Mishnah and Sota, so it also notes that the mitznefet of the it says that a chassan is not allowed to wear a crown. So maybe this relates to the fact that if a kohen is no longer able to wear mitznefet, so now have to wear their crown. So a chassan can't wear a crown either. We're out of mourning for the Beis Hamikdash. So it could be actually, if anything, that, you know, we've been saying that you know, Greek is a nice language. And maybe there's even, you know, wisdom from, you know, Greek wisdom that we can learn from. Maybe Greek is so nice that it's an adornment. It's something that's meant to embellish us. It's meant to embellish Torah. And therefore, maybe out of mourning, the Beis Hamikdash, it's not appropriate. So that's saying that Greek, you know, Greek and Greek wisdom is so good that's why we're not allowed to learn and not the opposite. The Gemara Menachos also poses a problem, because it seems like the problem with learning Greek wisdom is not that it's inherently bad, but it's bittul Torah. You're not allowed to learn Torah. This is something that that Tosfos seems to say, that seems to be a bittul Torah. So Tosfos embraces the idea that perhaps those who are krovin l'malchus, those who are in a position where there is a communal need for somebody to learn. So maybe there's some people who are allowed to learn it for particular purposes, but maybe not for everybody. So that's the approach that Tosfos seems to say. So what it sounds like from this, though, that if maybe learning Greek wisdom is not, and learning Greek is not spiritual Torah, if there's a real utility from it. Look at the Rambam Misodei HaTorah. So he talks about metaphysics and all sorts of wisdom, and he talks about how, you know, learning these matters can bring one to greater awe and appreciation of Hashem, that adds a lot to Hashem, something that perhaps is very worthwhile. But he goes on to say that, you know, this idea of going into the parties, of going into these deep matters, that that, you know, that was difficult for sages. So somebody has to be really well entrenched in Torah in order to engage these things. That they have to be male kreso lechem ubasar. They have to have, you know, filled their stomachs already with meat and bread and meat, meaning, you know, Torah and mitzvos, and then at that point they can go on to it. So that's a, you know, particular approach that is, that certain, you know, it's not necessarily indicative of all forms of wisdom, but certain forms of wisdom may only be appropriate in certain contexts. But no doubt for the Rambam, you know, brings some closer to God. But still, that really demonstrates that that wisdom beyond the Torah is not necessarily harmful or prohibited or problematic in and of itself, but And first of all, we saw the different definitions of what Chochmah Yavanis is and what Yavanis is. And it could be that there's, you know, that maybe, you know, it's limited to certain contexts, which obviously allows for a lot of opportunities to learn other things. But then you have to account for certain possibilities. But it doesn't mean that it's inherently bad. So why is it that Greek wisdom might be looked down upon? So Rabban writes that when it came to the mitchak mim v'teva, you know, those who are engaged in science, science and Greek wisdom, Aristotle, he called in Yanchaloi Sigelov Hubisvaraso Enanuemas. There was a concern that a Greek approach was that if you can't demonstrate something, if you can't rationalize it, you can't prove it, it's not true. And that certainly is a concern. It's a concern that lives until now. Some of the most articulate atheists of our time are of the approach that they're deeply entrenched in science, and if something can't be proven by reality, if it seems like evolution goes against the Bible, so science is always going to win. But if anything, Hanukkah probably should teach us that this isn't the case. That there are things that we can't, there are miracles that can happen, and they can't necessarily be logically explained. And that's partially, I think, what Hanukkah can be about. At any rate, the Sifrei in Dvarim says, "V'dibarta bam asem ikar v'alta asem tefila." You should make Torah the essence, and you shouldn't make it something that's secondary. You should try to engage mostly in them. Maybe you'll say, "Okay, I've learned everything I need to learn in Torah, and now I'm going to go learn something else." So you can never be really exempt from Torah. And this can be thought of in a qualitative and a quantitative way. That on one hand, in terms of our time, maybe there's an aspiration to make Torah the essence of what we do, but more importantly, it might be sort of not the actual minutes, but what's my attitude towards it? Even if you have to spend more time doing other things than Torah, is Torah sort of the main staple of my day, even if it's 5-10 minutes, or is it something else? But there's also a values. There's a values element to it. Is Torah the essence of our knowledge, and everything else kind of comes to enhance it, or is other knowledge really the essence of everything? Torah is just something else, right? So that's what the Chasam Sofer's critique of Greek wisdom, Greek culture, was that they sort of reverted everything. That when the Torah was written down in Greek, so all of a sudden, Greek the Greek wisdom came to serve Torah instead of it being the other way around, right? The question is Torah the root, or is philosophy the root? I realize I forgot to bring up, I think, the Rabbi Norman Lehman in his book Torah Mada discusses this, and he says that this was the problem in general. In Philo of Alexandria was a Jewish Greek philosopher. Jewish philosopher, however you want to phrase that, but he was Jewish, but entrenched in Greek philosophy. But he and his disciples didn't really learn things in the original; they learned everything in Greek. And Rabbi Lam says that this is sort of indicative of the fact that that Torah wasn't really of the essence. It was something to be understood and to be appreciated, but it was just one part of a system of Greek wisdom. And he says that that's a particular critique of Philo. Obviously, Rabbi Lam was very partial towards learning other disciplines and other forms of wisdom, but the priorities have to play out appropriately. And the critique that the Pachag Yitzchak had of Greek wisdom was that they were very, this sort of goes back to the Ramban's issue But okay, great. They understood science, but they didn't understand science to be the expression of God's will. I think that's an important point. And that's even when I think of when people ask, does science contradict the Torah? Does evolution contradict the Torah? So, there's two options. You can either say it contradicts, or you can look and say that, somehow, obviously the Torah is not a science book, and not everything's meant to be, you're not going to look at it to figure out the exact details of how everything unfolds. So, there's a way to understand how science and evolution unfolded, through the prism of Torah, but that's a whole orientation, right? Is my orientation that science is definitely the truth and Torah somehow has to fit into it, or is it the other way around? And that can very much make the difference between whether other forms of wisdom become something that are religiously enhancing or the opposite. And perhaps that speaks to a little bit of concerns of Greek wisdom, certainly as the Rivash said, that it's okay to study physics and metaphysics, but don't use it to uproot Torah. And that's a challenge that we have today, which brings me to this question. So, how does this all play out today? So this obviously is a new problem when we think about what role wisdom plays in Jewish life today. So this is something that goes back to ancient Greece, and obviously the problems of the questions of Torah Mata, Torah Derech Eretz. So I'm not going to obviously go through all those different expressions of it, but there's something to, I think, be understood in each and every generation. In fact, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wrote that when he wrote about some particular questions about Torah and other areas of knowledge, so he said that even if there's not much new to add in terms of the sources, but the reality makes it different. And I think sort of the question in terms of how does if we look at ourselves today and we say, if we go back 2,000 years ago, we say, Hellenism obviously had an adverse effect on Jews, to the point where it led to this war. It almost destroyed Judaism. And you look at the Book of Maccabees, and you can see that people took Greek culture so seriously that they were willing to really sacrifice their entire Judaism in order to fit in Greek-wise. So we look at ourselves and we ask this question: are we allowed to engage in Chochmah Yevanah, and how do we do that? So I think part of the question is just sort of what's the orientation to it? Is it that, that we really, are rooted in Torah and we filter out the bad and keep the good? Or do we, do we throw everything out or do we embrace all of it? And I think, unfortunately, there is evidence that on the one hand, there are those who really have embraced all facets of American culture. And if some aspects of an American lifestyle don't seem to fit well with Judaism, so Judaism is the one that has to give, and I think that sort of mentality, is problematic, obviously from a Shkavik perspective. But we see this playing out just as there were concerns of people really abetting their Judaism and leaving back in the times of Hellenism. So that remains a very big concern today as well. That even people who are, and I'm talking about people who, totally discarded Judaism. That's obviously, a separate issue. But even those who can be committed to Judaism or Jewish culture or traditions in some respect, but they see their whole orientation as being Americans and then sort of fitting Judaism into that. So that has that has some problematic effects down the line in terms of one's relationship to Torah and to Judaism. One thing that I think is a unique, something that's becoming a unique problem, even since I went to college, which wasn't that long ago, is that there really is something going on in universities today that might be seen as problematic to Torah. When I was in college, and I took a intro to Jewish history class, which I had to take for a Jewish studies major. So when we talked about biblical criticism and sort of the historicity of the Torah, so they always made the sort of apologetic that you can't, the professors would say, you can't, you can have your religion in synagogue, but when you're studying history, you can't bring your religious bias into it, and you can't look at it that way. But in fact, everybody comes with their biases, and that's what I began to see. And many scholars who tried to embrace some sort of theory of the Torah that says that there are multiple authors, that's not divine. So they have their own agendas and biases. And on the other hand, what we're starting to see is that lots of areas of the humanities are in fact, there is a big agenda. I'm not necessarily entirely opposed to every agenda that comes with it, but there are fields of studies I don't want to enumerate them right now, but they're fields of studies that are considered to be serious academic disciplines. But obviously those who are engaged in them have their particular biases, and those values are not necessarily those of Torah values. And what's more is that with cancel culture and everything like that, it's becoming very hard to sort of separate what's true, pure, what's pure history, what's pure psychology, what's pure, trying to understand the classics of literature, where a lot of it is becoming some sort of clash and iconoclasm, where truth is obviously being distorted by particular agendas. So that's no particular concern of can one go to college and learn Chachmei Yavanna? So obviously there's a place for learning. I 100% believe that there is a place for learning other outside wisdom, and it's crucial that we do so. And I certainly believe there's so many areas in which we have a lot to learn. I think there's so much we have to learn in terms of economics and psychology and history and literature that we can learn. But a particular question that's relevant to, for today, and has even for those of us who all of us who are not not students anymore. But this all sort of impacts the culture that we're seeing today. So we have to be sort of attuned to what extent and do we embrace certain elements and reject certain elements. And this comes down to, I think, what Rabbi Beryl Wein said in a lecture that I was listening to this morning. He has a podcast, he was discussing Hanukkah. And his main message for this year was that we have to understand that when it comes to our culture and our values, Shalchag Dola Mishalahem, after all the tribes brought their korbanos, this is at the end of Parshas Naso, the laning that we have for Hanukkah, so all the different tribes bring their offering, and then we read on the eighth day of Hanukkah at the very end, beginning of Parshas Baloscha, it says that Aaron's supposed to light the menorah. And Rashi explains how, Aaron, the reason why Aaron is given the menorah is because he became he became distressed that, he wasn't included in bringing the gifts of Nesim. And Hashem says to him, Shalchag Dola Mishalahem, your task is going to be greater than their task. So Rabbi Wein, sort of darshans from this is that we have to believe that with whatever that we're gaining from wherever we're getting it, we have to believe that our heritage and our values are the greatest assets that we have. And I think that's what a lot of this comes down to. It's very clear that Chazal had interaction with Greek culture and Greek wisdom. There's no doubt that learning the science of the day and the wisdom of the day is something that can be ennobling of Aaron Lichtenstein, in his defense of Torah Mada, or his not just his defense, but his advocating for learning other wisdoms, is that it can ennoble us, it can enrich us, it can help us, be more sophisticated thinkers of B'nai Torah. That was the Rav's also advocating for learning philosophy was that you're better able to express your values by being grounded in some of these disciplines. But at the same time, that what we have is our greatest asset. That's not to put down other cultures, but that just means that we have to embrace that. We have to be proud. We shouldn't go running to be something else, because the message of Hanukkah is we're just not going to be here. That's part of the miracle of Hanukkah, was that that Judaism was going in a particular turn. If everybody had Hellenized, there'd be no Judaism anymore. But if we want Judaism to survive, so we have to be willing to stand up and say that maybe there's something to take from Chachma Yavanis, but that shouldn't be the ikar of what we are and who we are. But I think there's a particularly important message when it comes to when I think about what's going on with COVID. So we can make an argument for why it's okay and important to learn outside wisdom and outside disciplines. But there's also a cost to being entirely dismissive of anything that comes from without Torah. This also comes from a podcast called Headlines that is done by a man named David Lichtenstein, who's happens to be a real estate magnate, but also a big Talmud Chacham. And he interviews different rabbis on different issues, contemporary issues. And he was asking Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita about COVID, and this was at the time when we were starting to see a lot of spikes in Jewish communities around Sukkot. And he was asking Rav Schechter, like, what's going on here? And Rav Schechter said, and I'm quoting here, "I think by certain groups, they don't want their children to go to college. They say goyim are stupid. They have nothing to teach. When it comes to college, chokhmah b'goyim lo tamim. Don't believe when people say that there's wisdom among the nations. But Chazal say chokhmah b'goyim tamim. You should believe when there's wisdom among the nations. They have chokhmah. They don't have Torah. In order to prevent their children from going to college." And they mean L'shem Shemaim. They don't want them to fall in line with Abi Karsus, I understand. But if you ingrain this in a child's mind that goyim are stupid and they have nothing to offer, that college is stupid and graduate school is even stupider, so then goyim don't know anything. And then you think you're smarter than the doctors, and that probably comes from that attitude, and that's also a big mistake. And goes on to say that also then, you know, children come to reject their heritage because they've been told that goyim don't have anything to offer, and then they learn that there is what to learn from the outside, and then they come to reject everything. And that being overcautious is a mistake. So there's obviously, you know, a big, you know, it's not, on the one hand, there's a consequence to over embracing Chochmah Yavanis and Chochmah Bagoyim, but there's also a cost to rejecting it entirely, because in some ways, you know, life and death really depends on it. We obviously believe that if science has anything to teach us, and maybe there's some scientific theories, okay, that, you know, maybe people have questions about, but if basic science seems to empirically demonstrate what goes on in this world, so we have to be understanding. We have to understand that people from the outside have what to contribute. But this Midrash in Eicha that Rav Schechter was referring to, that comes from Eicha, Malkav Sareh Bagoyim Ein Torah. So, Im Yomar Racha Adam Yesh Chokma Bagoyim Tamin. If there's wisdom, if somebody says there's wisdom among the nations, you should believe them. But if there's Torah among the nations, don't believe it. So that's, I really think that's where this line falls. And in fact, there is wisdom among the nations. There might be a question of how much concentration we give to it, and what kinds are valid and what we should. But when push comes to shove, there is a lot of wisdom out there that we should embrace from that you know, there are people out there who aren't either coming from a Jewish orientation or aren't Jewish to begin with, they have a lot to offer for us to understand. And learning English language helps us express ourselves well. Philosophy helps us articulate our values. It can come to enhance and ennoble Torah. But the separation between that and Hellenization is Torah b'goyim al tamim. That we, at the end of the day, when it comes to our values, so we have to have a very clear understanding of what our values are, and everything has to start from there. We start from Torah and our own internal values, and the chokhmah we can come to understand and appreciate, and it can enhance us as human beings and as Jews. But chokhmah certainly their son, we shouldn't reject entirely out of hand. But that was a tight balance that perhaps the Hellenists distorted a little bit. And that's a challenge that remains for us today, to not be overly embracing and overly rejecting of Chochmah B'Klein.